listening to the Pharmacy Podcast Network.
Welcome to the American Pharmacists Association's 2024 podcast coverage of the annual meeting and exposition held on March 22nd through 25th in Orlando, Florida. This year's theme, Unleashing the Power of Pharmacy, was designed to empower pharmacists to embrace your role as change agents and help revolutionize the profession. This is the APHA Podcast Power of Pharmacy Post Show in collaboration with the Pharmacy Podcast Network.
Hey, we are here talking with Commander Lindsay Wagner from the FDA, who's a board certified pharmacist, active duty commissioned corps officer with the United States Public Health Service, and branch chief in the Division of Drug Information within FDA Center for Drug Evaluation and Research, or what's known as CDER. Commander Wagner, you provided a very informative update on behalf of the FDA here at the APHA conference yesterday morning.
Yeah, thank you for having me. There's really so much that we can say when we bring the FDA update to APHA each year. It's always tough to give that presentation in just 1 hour. We've received such great feedback being here in the exhibit hall since. And my goal with that session is that anyone who leaves has learned about at least one new activity or new resource from FDA that they didn't know about before. And we've heard from so many people coming by that that's what happened. You know, they're signing up. One person downloaded Instagram just to follow FDA.
Wow.
They came by and joined our LinkedIn group for drug information specialists. We've shown people how to use the purple book, the orange book, drugs at FDA. It's been a really wonderful response. So we're really happy to be here.
Another resource is Q&A with FDA, which is FDA's podcast, and it is so refreshing, and it's updated, and we actually promote here on the Pharmacy Podcast Network. But I want you to tell our listeners about some of the FDA's activities that have affected pharmacy practice over the last year.
Yeah, I'll start with one of FDA's continued priorities. It's one that definitely affects pharmacists. That's FDA's overdose prevention framework,
Okay. Where
our vision is to prevent drug overdoses and reduce deaths, and to work with partners to make this happen. There are 4 priorities within that framework, which include supporting primary prevention by eliminating unnecessary initial prescription drug exposure and inappropriate prolonged prescribing, encouraging harm reduction by promoting innovation in pain management and education, advancing development of evidence-based treatments for substance use disorders, and beyond that, serving as a champion for effective treatments and supporting those with substance use disorders. And last but not least, protecting the public from unapproved, diverted, and counterfeit drugs. So we did. We had a number of notable activities in 2023 in that area. I think the approval of the first and second over-the-counter naloxone products is something that was big news,
yep,
and everybody was aware of. But we also required manufacturers to make prepaid mailback envelopes available to outpatient pharmacies. So there were a number of actions in that space, and that's just naming 2. And as I said yesterday, it's not a talk from a public health agency if we don't mention COVID-19, but it is warranted to talk about that still today. We have 5 FDA-approved COVID-19 vaccines, and we also spoke about Mpox yesterday. That's still something that we're working on. We have 1 Mpox vaccine as well. And as of Friday, because things are always changing and evolving, we have the authorization of a new product for pre-exposure prophylaxis, which brings us to 8 approved or authorized COVID-19 treatments. And we have 2 investigational Mpox treatments. And that's not to mention more than 300 diagnostic tests for COVID-19 and 7 for Mpox.
Excellent. Thank you so much. I want to ask about drug shortages. Is the FDA better equipped to prevent and mitigate drug shortages than in the past?
Absolutely. We covered that as well during yesterday's FDA update. Manufacturers are notifying FDA earlier than in the past about certain manufacturing interruptions and discontinuances that can lead to shortages. And these early notifications give FDA additional time to work with manufacturers and other stakeholders to identify ways to maintain treatment options and prevent shortages. In 2022, FDA worked with manufacturers and successfully prevented over 200 drug shortages through the use of a range of those available tools.
Okay, this is what I've been waiting to ask you and talk to you about because it's what I'm excited about as Pharmacy Podcast Network. You mentioned Q&A with FDA, the podcast series recorded and produced by the Division of Drug Information, where you work. And we know you recently released a podcast episode in conjunction with the APHA, which was so exciting, discussing the status of oral phenylephrine. We know you recently released a podcast episode in conjunction with the APHA. We know that this is a hot topic for pharmacists. What's the latest on this topic?
Yeah, we felt it was important to include APHA in this conversation about oral phenylephrine. And that episode is a great listen. It features Dr. Terry Michelle from CDER's Office of Non-Prescription Drugs, along with Dr. Elisa Bernstein, who is APHA's Senior Vice President for Practice, Policy, and Partnerships. The podcast covers, in much more detail than I can here, what led FDA to convene a meeting of the Non-Prescription Drugs Advisory Committee this past September. And they also discussed the effectiveness of oral phenylephrine as an active ingredient in over-the-counter cough and cold products. And during that meeting, the committee discussed new data on the effectiveness of oral phenylephrine and unanimously voted no, 16-0, that the current scientific data do not support the recommended dosage of orally administered phenylephrine as an effective nasal decongestant. Neither FDA nor the committee raised concerns about safety issues with oral phenylephrine at the recommended dose. And the discussion among the committee members also revealed a broad consensus that the current data presented, they don't support pursuing higher doses of orally administered phenylephrine. But since advisory committee meeting recommendations are not binding on the agency, FDA still has to make a decision on oral phenylephrine. And the Q&A with FDA podcast episode does a great job describing what will happen next if FDA announces that oral phenylephrine is no longer considered generally recognized as safe and effective as a nasal decongestant active ingredient for over-the-counter monograph products. And as a bonus for listeners, they can claim a half-hour credit of continuing education after listening. So they can find that on our website. I'm sure they can get it through this as well. And I just wanted to highlight that we just this past week added a podcast channel to our FDA YouTube. So people can go there as well. They can even get closed captioning there when they view our podcasts.
Excellent. Thank you for mentioning that. And yes, if you go to Pharmacy Podcast Network's main feeds, you will find Q&A with FDA. And if you Google Q&A with FDA, it's very easy to find. It comes right up. I think it's great that FDA is using podcasting to communicate better to healthcare professionals and our pharmacists and even our technicians.
Yeah, we have quite a few podcasts produced where I work in the Division of Drug Information, and we're very excited to now offer that CE at no cost. As you said, pharmacists, pharmacy technicians, physicians, nurse practitioners, the list goes on. And in addition to Q&A with FDA, there's a drug safety podcast that's recorded and released in conjunction with every new drug safety communication. We also produce the DISCO podcast, which is the Drug Information Soundcast in Clinical Oncology.
I love that.
That one highlights important information about significant new oncology approvals or new safety actions in that space. And yesterday during my talk, we have a CDER Small Business and Industry Assistance Chronicles podcast that's geared toward pharmaceutical industry. But I highlighted an episode that we did on compounding adverse events that I think is very applicable to pharmacists.
Very good. Thank you for sharing with that with our listeners. So, Commander Wagner, any last thoughts to share with our listeners?
I mentioned earlier that we've been able to prevent hundreds of drug shortages in recent years, in part because manufacturers are required to notify FDA of permanent discontinuances and certain interruptions in manufacturing. However, they do not have to notify FDA when they are seeing an increase in demand. And that gap in knowledge can sometimes lead to shortages that the agency can't address proactively. With the stimulant shortage, FDA also asked professional groups and healthcare professionals to accelerate efforts to support appropriate diagnosis and treatment of ADHD, such as furthering the development of clinical guidelines. We've also taken steps to support the development of alternative treatment options and have required updates to the drug labeling to present clear risk information. And I received a question yesterday after the FDA update asking where we go for information about drug shortages.
Yes.
And I recommend to always check FDA's drug shortages website and their database. The database will show the date that information about a shortage was last verified and will provide information about products currently available. And some of these products are currently available and they're listed in that database. It'll also say when a shortage is anticipated to be resolved.
Commander Lindsay Wagner, this has been such a treat for us. We thank you for taking time to talk with us on the APHA podcast, and we can't wait for the next episode of Q&A with FDA.
I'm right there with you.
Here's ResiPrep 360 creator Dr. Saley Traore Uwalaka, who won the APHA 2024 Farm Tank Competition, talking with Candace about her mission to help pharmacists exploring residency.
Hello and welcome to APHA Podcast. I am your guest host, Dr. Candace Olushala, and I am here with Dr. Salematu Traore.
Yes.
Queen.
Can we please acknowledge the impeccable pronunciation of my full name, my full government name?
Come on, government.
Yes. Man. Thank you so much for having me. This is a conversation I'm looking forward to so very much. Thank you.
You are welcome. Well, I want you to let people know what it is that you do, because you are running what is called ResiPrep.
Absolutely. So I am founder of ResiPrep 360. It is a program that was designed with the student pharmacist's postgraduate aspirations in mind. The vision of the program is to help prepare candidates to be as competitive as they want to be for the postgraduate opportunities that they want. So whether you're interested in residency, fellowships, or fellowship in industry, or other postgraduate opportunities, what I do is I work with you to objectively evaluate your CV and teach you how do you represent yourself accurately, so these programs can really see what you want them to see about you and the value you'll bring to their program.
Okay, yeah. So is this something that students would reach out to you directly and talk with you? Is there a specific time during their pharmacy program that they would start to reach out to you about these things?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. So I love engaging with the students no matter where they are in their matriculation. But usually residency and the pressure of securing a residency starts to get felt when they go on rotation. So open enrollment for the program is something that I start advertising around July and August to enroll my cohort for that year that's coming up. Because my approach to this is a longitudinal one. We start working together right in August to start building you and building and developing you as a candidate so that you are successful at phase one. That's my promise to them. My promise is that if we work together, you will survive phase one and secure a position at phase one, which has been incredibly successful. I'm so grateful for. But yeah, you reach out directly to me. I love speaking to first-year student pharmacists, and my conversation with those students, it's usually about what are all of the opportunities that you have while you're in pharmacy school to differentiate yourself as a candidate? How do you make yourself competitive through your leadership endeavors, your community service and community engagement opportunities that the school has, collaborating with your professors, finding a mentor quickly, and finding mentors that can guide you on your journey? Because this is a marathon. This is not something that's just going to happen in the last 2-3 months of school. So I love engaging with students no matter where they are, but as far as the match is concerned, August is an excellent time to connect and let's get to work. Let's get phase one secured.
Yes, because that process can be very daunting for a lot of students. They're overwhelmed.
Yes.
They're hearing all sorts of stories. They have all these different pressures.
Yeah.
So they don't always know exactly how to navigate that. And I think what I'm hearing from the benefit of your program is that there is a sense of a tailored-made approach that
yes.
schools don't have the capacity to do with each student.
Oh, that's so accurate. I appreciate you recognizing that, because it's one of the things I really pride myself on, this personalized approach to the match for every candidate. It's time consuming, yes, but I think that the secret sauce to the success of the program and everything I've been able to see about it is that this road to match is not a one-size-fits-all. You have some candidates that are parents, candidates that are married and have a home, but they also want this. There's the candidate that's graduating at 22. This is going to be their first job. So how you prepare to go sit in front of a recruiter or an RPD and make your case as to why you have what it takes. First of all, you've done what it takes to get to this point, but you also have what it takes to survive and thrive in their program. That requires some guidance and mentorship. And I love that period of when I'm learning about who they are and what they value, because our plan emerges as I get to know who they are and what's important to them. Like you, some candidates, it's the proximity to home. I don't want to commute too far. Other candidates, they're like, I'll go anywhere. They're like, I don't have any geographical limitations. Some candidates, it's just as simple as, I need to be close to the beach. It helps keep me mentally sane. I need to be able to travel and get to the beach. For some people, if they have hiking near the program, I want that. But I go that distance to know what are the things that are important to you. I know for me, it was, I wanted culture and good food. So I ended up in Philly.
Come on now. I need to eat well and with flavors.
I ended up in Philly where I experimented with so many cultural foods, but that's how I maintained my mental health through the entire thing and being in an incredibly rigorous program. And so different things for different folks, and I'm mindful of that and respectful of what people want. I don't try to influence their choices or decisions about where they want to go. If they have aspirations and they want to apply to a really big program, I'm like, we're going to do this, but here's usually the type of candidate that goes here and thrives here, that gets an interview here. This is what that looks like. You don't have 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, but who knows? Like, weirder things have happened, and sometimes they get in. Right? And I love sharing those stories of when the candidate didn't look exactly like what we know about the program, and they went there, made their mark, and they thrived, opening the door for another non-traditional candidate to also have a shot in that program. It's my favorite thing to see.
I think this is actually a program that a lot of pharmacy schools should really start to look into, because I know that a lot of the schools have a lot of burden in having such large numbers in each graduating class wanting to do a residency, and the capacity for this is challenging. It's not that the schools don't want to pour into the students, but there's just not enough.
Yeah.
So those of you that are part of colleges, whether you're a student or you are a professor or staff member of these colleges of pharmacies, I would highly recommend looking into Resi Prep 360 as something to recommend to students.
Thank you.
Yes, because we always want our students to do well.
Yeah.
And we don't want students to feel like the school is letting them down.
Absolutely.
It's really not that. It's often more of a capacity issue.
Absolutely.
Not a desire issue.
100%. And, you know, people always ask me about growing this thing, partnering with schools. And I always say, like, when I was building this thing, my client that was in my head, it was colleges of pharmacy. Mm-hmm. And that's a huge motivation for me this year to approach colleges of pharmacies and schools of pharmacies and tell them all of the ways in which I'm willing and prepared to collaborate with them to help them meet their goals of placing their students. And so if you hear this and you're an experiential education director, let's talk.
Yes, yes, please reach out to her. And I just thank you so much for having the heart for this.
Thank you.
It's very much needed in the profession.
I appreciate this opportunity so much to share about Resi Prep, my little passion project that has a really big heart and is growing. So I'm incredibly proud of the progress, but I have big dreams for this thing, and I appreciate opportunities like this one to kind of reach the masses. Thank you.
The APHA 2024 keynote speaker, F-14 fighter pilot, and 2x Wall Street Journal best-selling author of Span of Control and also Fearless Leadership, Carrie Lorenz. Learn more about Carrie's mission and exciting background at CareyLorenz.com.
APHA 2024, the American Pharmacists Association. We are here with Carrie Lorenz. I am so excited to interview you, Carrie. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Oh, super glad to join you. Thanks for having me.
You had a theme that folds into the rest of our, I don't know if you want to call it the temperament of the entire conference. We came out of a pandemic. It was a shipwreck, to say, of how much insecurity was built up and what was going to happen next. But this phase of the pharmacy profession is all about rebuilding, and some of that rebuilding must play into the world of leadership. And that's the similar theme that you were talking about. I want you to just, right out of the gate, for people that didn't get to hear your keynote, which I heard, I didn't get to hear it myself, but I heard it was just absolutely explosive and very inspirational. Talk to our listeners about yourself and what you do and where you're from and your experience here at the APHA.
So my name is Carrie Lorenz, and I was one of the United States Navy's first women to be assigned to fly the F-14 Tomcat on and off of aircraft carriers. So I spent about 10 years as a Navy fighter pilot really planning, briefing, executing really complex missions. But I think where that's really relevant to what's happening right now in the pharmacy industry is that we have to take a look at when we're navigating a lot of uncertainty and a lot of change and really dynamic situations where people are showing up, oftentimes understaffed, overworked, a lot of stress. How can every person own their role as what I call a catalyst, where regardless of the team size that they lead or if they're one of the students that are here right now, how do you get yourself and your activities and the things that you do every day aligned to your purpose so that you get to where you want to go faster? And obviously generating great patient outcomes, serving our communities, really moving forward in what are and what continue to be really uncertain times.
Well, something that was very important to your existence as a pilot that was very structured into what you did during missions was the debrief and being able to take everything that had happened from a data analytics perspective that the computer was probably sucking up, as well as your experience and telling your commanders of what was happening. Talk to us about how important that was and how that connects to being a leader in pharmacy.
Right, so when we're working in an environment where so much of the information is changing, or just our day-to-day is changing, when so much is expected of us, we have to really make sure that we're not leaving our success to chance. Okay. And the way we did that is that we, after every single flight, took the time to debrief, because we want to figure out really, really quickly what's working, what's not, and why. Because there are pharmacies, there are hospital systems right now that might be operating really effectively, or they're a little more efficient than they were, say, 4 years ago. But if we're not internally taking the time to debrief, we really don't know if it's because we got lucky and that luck streak is going to end, or if it's because we're really able to learn as fast as our environment is changing. So that's really about what the debrief is about. And what that does is it gives everybody a sense of agency and ownership, not only in their own personal development, but team development, and hopefully what that will leave, regardless of whether you're a patient-facing, interacting person, or you're part of admin, wherever you may be, that it's always about driving that more effective, safe patient outcome.
From a mission perspective, the pick, the pharmacist in charge, was the pilot. So you were the pick on the mission. and your mission was surrounded by people on deck, the mechanics, your commanders, people were, that were putting the mission together, but you were the pick. So you were the one that was in that pilot seat. You were looking right before they said go, or whatever you said, to get off the runway, very short runway on that ship. Talk to us about your first experience in doing that and how much trust you put into your team that everything was going to be okay with the thrust that you had. I don't know how many G's are coming off of the flight deck, but talk to us about that experience.
Oh my gosh, it's absolutely amazing. It is an e-ticket ride, better than anything you could get, even, dare I say, here at Disney. Next to us. Sorry, folks. but it's amazing. And that trust and that teamwork that you have, you only build that through holding each other mutually accountable, through mentoring, through bringing people with you, and passing along your lessons learned. So when you partner that way of being, that way of teaching, that way of behaving into your culture, it then becomes a culture of excellence and one that is predicated or dependent upon relentless preparation, right? We never, ever settle and think that was good enough. We don't need to do anymore. So it's staying curious, it's asking questions, and it's knowing that you are dependent upon the person to your left, the person to your right, and, you know, a rising tide floats all boats, if you will.
Yes. Now, the debrief also gives us ways to pivot. When we think of patient management, treatment management, the intensity of how pharmacists are starting to use more data, the debrief will say, okay, either the next patient engagement that I have with this person during something that's as serious as, say, cancer treatment, and then the next patient comes, that debrief gives us a map of what not to do next time, that we might have made some mistakes or might have made some adjustments. Talk to us about how important it is to keep cycling and keep learning from what we did within, I'm going to say, a mission on from your perspective, but it's the treatment plan on the pharmacist's perspective.
It's the same thing. It's critical, right? What most people don't know, and I've got two books, and I wrote about one of my parents in each of my books, is I actually lost both of my parents due to a lack of patient safety and or communication within a healthcare team. So when I share with you the importance of debriefing and communicating effectively and navigating stress or really uncertain environments, it's because a team or people who did not do that effectively actually cost me both of my parents. So I know that by implementing these ideas or the way of communicating or behaving even is the difference between maybe your mom or your dad or your sibling or aunt or uncle or your child coming home or not coming home. And the reason the debrief itself is so critical, again, it goes back to, we want to know what's working and what's not and why. And too often what can happen, especially when you have different culture styles or seniority or perception that you can't push back on maybe doctors, right? Because they're the ones who are supposed to know everything. That's where you put patient safety and a patient outcome at risk. So this idea of debriefing and how we communicate is that we show up understanding it is not about who is right. It is about what is right. And when you show up to every conversation with a mutual understanding that, just remember, we're focused on a good patient outcome. This is not about who is right. It is about what is right. The path forward looks very different than it is oftentimes today. And when you show up with that shared level of service and understanding, I think you collaborate more effectively. You trust your team that when things go wrong, I trust that you are going to say, I made this mistake and I can fix it. Because there are too many, whether it's an operating room, you know, pharmacy offices on sites, wherever the case may be, where there is currently an elephant in your room right now that everybody knows about, but nobody's talking about because ego gets in the way. And when ego gets in the way, our family members suffer.
That is very insightful. And I love the fact that you're making accountability not sound like a negative, which sometimes people perceive it that way, and they don't want to feel singled out. That's versus right. It being really about the holistic and the total and the ecosystem of accountability. And what that means for patient care, what that means for outcomes.
That's right.
It's fascinating.
That's right. Well, and the thing that it unlocks as well is that if you're taking the time to do regular debriefs with your team, one of the questions we can even ask is, has anybody ever seen this happen before, right? So you want to be sharing these lessons learned and these best practices, not hiding the things that go wrong or hiding if you're overwhelmed, right? One of the things that I know I've seen and you've heard in conversations even around here is that people are feeling really stressed and really burned out right now. So we can't keep asking people to do more. And it's not just simply, you have to work smarter, not harder, right? Because everybody is firing on all cylinders right now. And the best leaders, though, are keenly aware of what do I need to do personally every day to minimize, manage, and then mitigate mine and my team's task saturation, right? What are the signs of that? Oftentimes, we don't even know. We don't take the time. We think Sally or Mark just showed up and is constantly crabby. You know, they've shut down communications. They're just crabby. But what we don't realize is that part of the power in us moving forward in a more healthful way and with our sanity in check is understanding our not only the way we respond to task overload or task saturation, but how our teammates are as well. Some people compartmentalize and they can get their task at hand done very, very effectively. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, nothing else is being done, right? They're looking through a straw and only getting that one task done. Other people throw up their hands, they slam the door, and they go on an extended lunch break, right? And we interpret that as somebody not being a team player. We don't necessarily realize that person is task overloaded. They need help, and they don't know how to winnow down the most important things they should be doing to give themselves some space back. Which loops me back to the reason we debrief is because you find mistakes, you find things that are working faster than if you're not. When you are doing that continuously and every day, that is when you get margin back. That's when you get space to breathe, space to make good decisions, space to celebrate people's success. The debrief is how you make that happen.
What I'm hearing you say, and it's turning lights on in my own head for my own team, and we're going to, a shout out to Kevin Jones, who's been here helping me as my wingman the whole time. We're going to do a debrief, Kevin. We're definitely doing a debrief, but is it builds confidence in the team.
Yes.
And I didn't think of that until I just heard you say that. I'm like, wow, this would build confidence. So pharmacists listening, techs listening, technicians listening, who are the right hands of our pharmacists. If you take time to debrief on something that took place, whether that was a mistake or a negative or a positive even, it's going to build confidence.
100%. And it builds that trust and that mutual support that you know every day you show up that you're going to figure it out. You know things are going to go awry, right? But when you build that confidence in each other and in yourselves, you know you're going to figure it out.
How do people get in touch with you, follow you, purchase the books that you have? Is there one place we want you to share that people can listen and go to?
Great question. So I'm a little more active on Instagram, a little bit on LinkedIn. And you know what? My books are Span of Control and Fearless Leadership. And if you have an independent bookstore, buy you, order it from them. Okay. Hook your community members up. Or you can get it on Audible, Kindle, and certainly Amazon will bring it to your doorstep tomorrow. So it's an easy read. I wrote both of them myself. So no big words. And I think your folks will find it really, really helpful.
Thank you so much, Carrie, for being part of the APHA podcast and what you do to inspire people that are wanting to be better leaders and wanting to impact the world around them. So thank you so much.
Thrilled to be here. Thanks for having me.
Dixie Lakic, CEO of PRRX, which stands for Pharmacy Ethics, Education, and Resources, known as PEER, talks with Todd Urey about their mission to improve the profession of pharmacy.
APHA podcast. This is the APHA 2024 post show. Do you know what I'm excited about is introducing our listeners to Dixie Laycock, who is president of PeerRx. This is an exciting organization. You can find them at www.peerrx.org. Dixie, it's so good to see you.
It's good to see you again. Thank you for having me again. It's been a while.
I know, it has been. Time goes too fast.
It does.
Orlando, Florida, APHA, how's this conference been for you so far?
Well, I just got here today. I was very excited. The general session this morning was fabulous. Our speaker, the keynote speaker, was just right on point for what we need for pharmacy today. And I'm just excited to see everybody, see my friends, get some CE, be around, and, you know, do the House of Delegates tomorrow. Just, I love coming to this conference and just getting the whole profession of pharmacy together and working together and figuring this stuff out.
So thank you for looking to the Pharmacy Podcast Network to help promote your program and your mission. If the listeners don't know about PeerRx, please share with them, what is the mission of PeerRx?
Sure. So PEER stands for Pharmacy, Ethics, Education, and Resources. And I started this organization actually right after, it came after APHA in 2015. I was talking to one of my bestie friends from pharmacy, and it was like, well, what am I going to do in my life? You know, we, my husband and I at one point owned 5 independent community pharmacies.
Oh, okay.
And I knew we were in that junior partnership wind down. So we, you know, it's like, well, I need to start looking to the future. And I started thinking about medication safety and law CEs and the things that pharmacists need. And I was trying to figure out how to make what I wanted to do a little different. And this is 2015. It's right after the NECC crisis and what we were going through. I was very close. I'm a past president of the American College of Apothecaries, so we were very connected to what was going on in the compounding world. And it just made me think, you know, here you've got this small group, 1 or 2 bad apples that has completely changed the core of pharmacy and our profession. You know, when you think about compounding, that's our roots and where we started. And because of somebody's poor ethics and making those bad choices along the road, you know, nobody starts off, you know, deciding they're going to ruin a
profession.
Just through the course of business and the different decisions they made that, you know, just completely rocked our profession. And that made me think, you know, I think we need to talk more about pharmacy ethics and what it means to us and how it affects our daily decisions. And, you know, how you do start with small things leading into bigger things that explode. And I'd like to think we learn from that, but I'm already seeing some things in some of the things that are out there today that I don't know that we have. I'm really afraid, you know, kind of what's going on with some drug shortages and things like that, that we're going to unfortunately see another similar situation. I hope not, but that's really been my mission, is to talk about med safety, talk about how ethics plays a role in med safety, and, you know, our primary role is to, and our primary focus is our patient. That's who we're supposed to be the most loyal to. And if our decisions are made with that in mind, and keeping that always in the forefront of our decision-making, then we're always going to be okay. But when we lose sight of that, things start to fall apart.
Yep. That makes sense. Yeah. All right. So
I'm sure I have a mission statement on the website. I have no idea what it is.
It sounds like a mission statement. So,
but that's why I started the organization and what I've been trying to do with the presentations I've given and the the continuing education that's available on my website. And doing it, you know, med safety from ethics, but then also different, you know, I have workforce stress and how to deal with that. And just looking at these hot pharmacy topics that, you know, looking at it from a pharmacy point of view, because sometimes, unfortunately, pharmacists have to take CEs on ethics, specifically on ethics, but it's very difficult to find something about pharmacy. And you can find medical ethics, but that doesn't really relate to why the core reason they need to take the CE.
Yep.
So I wanted to create these CEs that would be actual situations that pharmacists and pharmacy technicians encounter on the field.
That makes sense. Yeah. So you and I met about 2 years ago. We're going to be doing some work together. We're going to be working with ConveyMed, which is a audio app that's dedicated to continuing medical education for our physicians. Pharmacy Podcast Network partnered with them, so now we're bringing more education to pharmacists specifically. Mm-hmm. So talk to us about the series that's going to be coming out.
I'm so excited. We've been working on this for two years, and I feel like every time we got close, something happened. And so we're going to have four sessions, 30 minutes apiece. I'm going to talk about pharmacy ethics, mm-hmm. and what are our core values. I have Teresa Toll we're going to talk about APHA and the House of Delegates process and how APHA speaks for the entire profession of pharmacy. We have a code of ethics. I talk about that a lot when I'm doing my peer presentations because I think it's important for pharmacists to realize we have a code of ethics and where that comes from. I have Donna Horn and I are going to talk about when you have a med error, what your immediate reaction should be, what's an appropriate reaction, and then what needs to happen afterwards to make sure, mitigate some of that risk of it happening again. And then I'm 99% sure my friend Tosin, David and I are going to talk also about med safety just in general and, ways that we can do better in the med safety field. So we'll have those four sessions, and we're working on scheduling. Yep. I call it herding the cats.
Yes.
But trying to get everybody scheduled and get those out as quickly as we can.
Excellent.
So I do have to mention, if you don't mind, the podcast series is sponsored by Waypoint RX. Waypoint is the Coakley family, which has been very supportive of community pharmacy.
I know Ben
and Matt, and they're just a great group of guys. They're doing a whole bunch of different things in the pharmacy space. They, do financial management, but they're really working to help support community pharmacy and independent community pharmacy and make us all better. So I'm just really touched that they believe enough in peer. They've been supporters of peer for many, many years, and this was something I knew would be right up their alley.
Yes.
To give them some exposure and connection to the pharmacy ethics. It's important to them too.
Shout out to the Waypoint team.
Yeah.
Ben and Matt, we love what they do for independent community pharmacy. All right, listeners, to learn more, as we're waiting for the series to come out, it's peerrx.org. It's peerrx.org. You can email you can email Dixie at dixie@peerrx.org. Dixie, thank you so much for sharing this with us, and we can't wait to get started.
Thank you for having me, Todd. I appreciate it.